Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. John Feinstein joins us each Monday. Time to hit some of the national headlines with John Feinstein. Presented by All American Pest Control. Plans starting at just $39 a month. Visit yuckbugs.com to learn more. John, how are you this afternoon?
I am well, Jonathan, and I thank you guys for allowing me to push back an hour so I could get some work done before I came on to talk to you.
Nope, no problem whatsoever.
Can you talk about what you were doing, John, or is this top secret?
No,
okay,
no.
Tell us what you were up to.
I don't have secrets. I was interviewing Tony Dungy at his house here in Tampa. Tony, as you know, was the first African-American to win a Super Bowl as a coach. He was also the first African-American coach to ever work for the Pittsburgh Steelers as an assistant, and was one of those guys in the 70s who was a starting quarterback in the Big Ten at Minnesota for 3 years. And like Warren Moon, like some others, Chuck Ely from Toledo, who was a star, went undrafted coming out of college and was eventually signed by the Steelers as a safety and played on their Super Bowl team the next year. Got to play in one NFL game as a quarterback when both Terry Bradshaw and his backup Mike Kruzek were both hurt in the same game. And he was put in the game as an emergency quarterback. But I'm doing a book, as I think I've told you guys, on race in sports, because I think it is still very much the elephant in the room, both in sports and in our society, as we saw with all the polarization surrounding the anthem protest 2 years ago. And I thought Tony would be very helpful, and I was wrong. He was more than very helpful. He's an amazingly bright and successful person, but told me stories that I had no idea about growing up as a kid and what went on in his high school, and it was a fascinating 3 hours. So I thank you guys for allowing me to spend all the time I needed with him.
John Feinstein with us. John, did you watch the heavyweight title fight on Saturday?
Did not. I don't do pay-per-view. The last boxer I really followed was Sugar Ray Leonard because he was a Washington franchise, and we covered him at the Post like he was the football team or the NBA team or the NHL team. We didn't have a baseball team at the time. And the last fighter I really cared about was Muhammad Ali. I've just not been into boxing for many, many years.
Does it matter that boxing has a big night like that, like where you have
sure.
the heavyweight bout back and the title, for at least for a time, was held by an American?
I think that it matters to boxing. The event got huge coverage. The heavyweight title fights have always been the heart and soul, really, of boxing. I remember that again back to when I was a kid. The fact that ESPN was trying to sell the fight on through their ESPN Plus on pay-per-view and gave it incredible hype always helps. ESPN is very powerful. And so, yes, there's no question that it's good for boxing. And at least for a night, it didn't feel as if boxing was a dying sport.
John, when you look at the Miracle on Ice 40 years later, are you are you amazed at the staying power of it with all the tributes being paid and people re-airing the game and Miracle last night in primetime on ESPN being shown? Are you amazed by that, or does it not surprise you given the significance of that moment in sports?
It honestly doesn't surprise me, Chad, because I'm old enough to vividly remember that night when we beat the Soviets. And the timing was so important because it wasn't just, you know, as Kurt Russell says at the end of the movie, it wasn't just a hockey game. We were battling the Soviets who had gone into Afghanistan. You remember Jimmy Carter had already announced that we were going to boycott the Summer Olympics. So unless there was some kind of miraculous change, we weren't even going to be competing in the Summer Olympics in Moscow that summer. It was completely unexpected because of the dominance of the Soviets. Remember, they'd beaten the NHL All-Stars the previous year. They'd beaten the Americans in an exhibition game, 10-3 in Madison Square Garden. And it was a bunch of kids who you could like. It was a bunch of young American kids who were either in college or just out of college. And it was a miracle. As Herb Brooks said to the team before the game, You play these guys 10 times, they're going to beat you 9. They might beat you 9, but not tonight. And it all worked out, and they did. People forget that they had to play another game Sunday, and if they'd lost that game, they would have only gotten the bronze medal, and that certainly would have taken away from the win over the Soviets. And Al Michaels' call was miraculous. I saw an interview. I actually watched the end of the movie, I think Saturday. It was on the NHL Network. And after the showing of the movie, Bob Costas interviewed Al Michaels about that what happened in Lake Placid. And Michaels made the point that he was just incredibly lucky that the right words came out of his mouth at that moment. Now, the great ones tend to have good moments at the most important moments, and Michaels is one of the greatest play-by-play guys ever. So, no, honestly, I'm not surprised. My one regret, Chuck Culpepper, who's a friend and colleague at Post, went up to Lake Placid to write a piece for the 40th anniversary, and it was terrific. You should look it up online if you haven't seen it. And I was jealous of Chuck because I've wanted to do that for years, go back up to Lake Placid, and the arena is still there. The speed skating rink is still there. They still have a lot of different luge and bobsled competitions up there on a regular basis. I've been up to Lake Placid. I was there actually for an exhibition game between the U.S. and the Soviets in 84. And the U.S. won, and then, of course, did nothing in the Olympics that year. So, it was an amazing event, and it is the single greatest upset in sports of my lifetime. There have been others that have been amazing, but there's never been anything like it. So, no, I'm not surprised to give you a long-winded answer.
John, I was surprised to see Kevin Stallings get a 3-year show cause from the NCAA for his time at Pitt, where he had I guess coaches that weren't coaches leading practices and shoot arounds, and he had an alert system to get them off the court if any official was around. But again, this is, and it's funny to us because we followed Kevin Stallings here, and right. He hated the cheating in college basketball and hated Bruce Pearl and hated anyone that had this. And now him and Bruce Pearl both have experienced 3-year show causes. I also find it funny that the NCAA is hammering a coach who's clearly retired and never coaching again with a 3-year show cause, while Will Wade and Bill Self continue to coach their teams into the NCAA tournament.
And Sean Miller. There are a couple things come to mind here. This goes back to the great Jerry Tarkanian line that I know I've used on you guys before about NCAA justice, that when the money fell out of the Emory Air Express package heading from the Kentucky basketball office to Sean Mills' father, that the NCAA was so mad at Kentucky that they were going to put Cleveland State on 3 years more probation. Because obviously this is a meaningless thing, as you say, because Kevin's not even coaching. That said, you referenced Kevin's feelings about Bruce Pearl. I remember running into Kevin, and I always got along with Kevin. I knew him back when he was an assistant for Gene Cady at Purdue. And I ran into him at a summer camp, and I said, "How are you doing?" And he said, "Well, considering that I'm in a league where I'm the only one not cheating, I'm doing okay." So for that to, come 180 degrees the other way, leading to this, is both ironic and sad. And, of course, the same thing with Bruce Pearl. Remember, he was most famous as a, quote, whistleblower, unquote, on Illinois years ago when he was at Iowa. And now he's been involved in 2 major NCAA investigations.
When we come back, we'll stick with college basketball, and we'll ask John about the ACC, his home conference, and just how the mighty have fallen in one season.
Brought to you by All American Pest Control. Plans starting at just $39 a month. Visit yuckbugs.com.
Drew Maddux talks college basketball with the 3HL crew. Presented by Lance Drury Law. Mondays and Thursdays on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. More with John Feinstein now.
So the ACC had 3 number one seeds a year ago, and it's not a lock to get 4 tournament bids this season. How bad is the downturn, and is it an anomaly or the beginning of something, you think?
Oh, I think it's an anomaly, Paul. The ACC has had, you know, quote unquote, down years in the past. It's not that often that they have a year where no one from the conference makes the Final Four. Of course, last year Virginia won the national championship, but it does happen. They have had years where they haven't had anybody make the Final Four. I do think they overexpanded in the name of football, and they brought in some schools that really aren't basketball schools. That has hurt them in terms of the depth of the league and in terms of the fact that some of the top teams and mid-tier teams who need big wins when they're on the bubble are playing teams at the bottom of the league who don't have very good nets. Now it's called net instead of RPI, but it basically does the same thing. But I do think it's something of an anomaly. You're not going to see North Carolina at the bottom of the league for the next 5 years, 10 years, or even 1 year. That is very much an anomaly.
Is it good for hockey when you have the story of this 40?
The ACC's down?
No. When you have the story of this 42-year-old guy that goes in and wins a game for the Carolina Hurricanes, and I'm going to talk more about this a little bit later, but is that good for the sport when you have a story like that and a guy can only give up two goals in a period and a half in an NHL game?
I mean, he only faced 10 shots, and he gave up two goals, and they had the lead when he came in. It's not like it's proof that, you know, the NHL isn't that good and you can step off a Zamboni and be an NHL goaltender. If he'd had to play the next game for 60 minutes, I suspect he would have gotten bombarded. And you do have moments like this when guy, you know, like Tony Dungy playing quarterback when he was a starting safety for the Steelers years and years ago. We do have moments like this in sports, and sure, it calls attention to the game and it humanizes it. And I don't have any issue with it. No, I think it is good for the game, actually, because you wouldn't have been talking hockey with me today other than the Miracle on Ice if this hadn't happened.
John Feinstein with us. John, the memorial service happening today for Kobe and Gianna Bryant, that takes place at Staples Center, and I'm sure it will be jam-packed. But I'm curious just if you're interested, if you're going to be watching this to see who says what, and really just I'm hoping to bring some people closure, which you always hope for in a tragic accident like this.
Yeah, I think closure is really tough when young people die. And Kobe it was a young person at 41, not to mention Gianna and the other two 13-year-old girls who died. But I think for some people, it will allow closure. I'll actually be on the road driving from Tampa to Palm Beach, so I won't see it. I'm sure I'll see highlights tonight after I get to the hotel. It's very tough. It's very tough because I always – I find myself in situations where somebody dies young or a Navy had a football player who was found dead in the dorm, one of the senior leaders on their team this year. And you look for words of comfort. Where are they? I mean, what do you say? I tweeted this the other day. To me, the most tragic words you can write are he or she is survived by his or her parents. I don't think you can write words more tragic than that. And I don't know how you find comfort when something like this happens. It was just an awful tragedy. And we all know life goes on when people die in tragic situations, whether they're famous or not famous. But boy, it's sure not easy. It's not easy at all. I probably, if I were in a place where I could watch, I probably wouldn't, just because it would be too upsetting.
So, John, don't take this as I condone death threats from fans or anything like that. But I do find it interesting that if you want to change the narrative on a story you're getting crushed over, you start talking about receiving death threats on social media or via email, and suddenly that story changes. Mm-hmm. That seems to be what's happening with Houston Astros players now. And now suddenly the narrative has changed to, boy, fans are really now going over the top with this because a few idiots out there decided to send death threats to some of the players. And now, does that mean we have to stop talking about the Astros cheating the way they did and cheating the game of baseball the way they did because of this?
No, I don't think so, Chad, because, as you said, there are idiots in situations all the time. You know, we hear about place kickers. Who, especially in college, who get death threats because they miss a short kick or a key kick at the end of a game. I still remember one of the worst things I ever witnessed was in 2011 when Joel Ward scored the winning goal for the Capitals in a seven-game series in overtime in Boston and received literally thousands of, and he's African-American or African-Canadian, excuse me, people, you know, calling him the N-word and all sorts of other racial epithets and death threats. And you can't stop crazy people from being crazy. It's an unfortunate fact of our lives. It doesn't change what the Astros did. And what happens with this is now all of a sudden they're victims. And, you know, they shouldn't be victims. They shouldn't have to receive these threats. I totally agree with that. But the bad things that have been happening to them, the criticism they're getting, us talking about it, they brought that on themselves. That doesn't excuse anybody who goes over the top.
Seems like there's a lot of good for players in the CBA that the owners are laying out there, and that obviously it's gotten far enough that the players are in a position to vote on it pretty much. What's your feeling about what you've read and heard about the compromises made therein?
Well, the one thing that I don't get in what I saw of the proposed CBA, and Paul, you're far more expert than I am on this, but they're proposing an extra regular season game and losing an exhibition game. Now, most of the guys who are going to be on teams wouldn't be playing in that exhibition game anyway. They might play a series or two at most versus a real game where the hitting is real, everybody plays the whole game. And unless I missed it, the pay raise offered is 1%. If I'm the players, especially given all the risks that we know that are associated with playing the game and all the talk we've had about trying to make the game more safe for the players, I'm not signing up for that for 1%. They're going to have to give me a lot more than that. And I think that may be why a number of players have attacked the deal, why the player reps didn't vote on Friday and said instead, you know, we're going to meet again with the NFL. And I would think that's going to be the sticking point as much as anything.
It'd be 1.5 by the time the whole thing's over to move $5 billion.
1.5.
That's money.
How would you guys feel if you had to work, 5 hours a day instead of 4 hours a day, and they offered you a 1.5% raise, and you're not getting hit on every time? Maybe you're getting hit by Twitter or something like that, but you're not getting your head knocked off by 300-pound men.
Well, how about the fact that the owners would say that they can't add to regular season overtime because of the wear and tear on the players, but
yeah,
we'll add a 17th regular season game, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, and you know why? Because adding 5 minutes to overtime doesn't make them any more money.
Right.
And in fact, it creates headaches for them with games running into one another. If a 1 o'clock game goes overtime or whatever. It's like years ago when the college president said, we can't have a playoff in football because we don't want to endanger our student athletes, my favorite term, as you know. But then all of a sudden there was so much money on the table that they went from 11 games to 12 games. Then they added a conference championship game. And now we have a playoff where the team that wins ends up playing 15 games. All of a sudden, it's not so tough for the student athletes to play 15 games. So it's always about the money. You guys know that.
John, thank you as always, and we will catch up next week.
Look forward to it, and again, thanks for helping me out with the schedule. Yeah,
no problem. No problem. Thank you.
All right, talk to you guys. Thanks.
John Feinstein, presented by YuckBugs.com, All American Pest Control. Again, YuckBugs.com.